You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is A Fistful of Datas. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
I'm James from London.
And we have two guests. One of us is the resounding teacher. Who are you?
Christopher.
Christopher.
In South Carolina.
South Carolina. And rounded up by...
Matt in Tennessee.
Matt in Tennessee. All right. So, Matt, how have you been since the last time we met?
Has Matt been on three episodes in a row?
I may have, and I think I'm scheduled for next week too, actually.
Yes, look, I'm gonna bring this up now. Back in the olden days, we would never have like repeated guests because, frankly, people's endurance wasn't that high. But you know, as we record over the. Number of months now, rather than number of weeks. It gives the guests a chance to recover and to come back fresh.
There you go.
Or maybe to forget their experience.
There you go. Unless, of course, I start posting these every week like I'm supposed to, which is why I wanted to build up a few and then start posting.
Hey, Lou, listen. When we'll get to the end of season six, you'll realize you haven't posted something for 6 months.
Yeah, I'm no kidding.
Every day.
Every day. Oh, no! We'll have to do it every week, or else they're going to get one and skip the rest.
I just want to point out, Lou, that the last time I was on, you were saying that you guys were trying to finish as we finished. And we finished 4 months ago.
Yep, and it all went to hell from that point on. Yep. You're absolutely right. And so, and as I mentioned before we started recording, I do actually have another job now. I just got hired on. Do you guys remember when I used to do surveillance in retail? Well, now I will be doing surveillance at the casino. So, looking forward to that. I'm a little nervous because I have to learn table games. I have to learn how to play them. I have to learn how to deal them. And I have to learn how to cheat them. So it's going to be very fascinating on things that I'm going to have to learn in the next year. But I'm definitely looking forward to that, except for the possible overnight shift.
I'd say you should just start your training with lots of fun movies about gambling in casinos. You can start with Rounders and then like just roll through.
Yeah, a couple of Ocean's movies. And
Oh, I love the Ocean's movies. You know, who wouldn't want to... Well, excuse me as I say that. I mean, who doesn't love movies about robbing the casino?
You sure you want to go on record at the beginning of this?
I was going to say, are you sure you want to go on record having said that?
I said movies, not real life. And you know what's funny is that some of the things that people do to cheat are card counting. And it's like, as my understanding of card counting is you have so many aces, so many face cards and deck, and you figure if you have a four-deck shoe, that's however many of those times four. And then every time you run across one of those, you deduct a point, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Towards the end of the shoe, you kind of have an idea of how many of which cards are still remaining. And in that case, then you up your bet to try to break the house. And I just can't learn that system. I don't know if that's part of it. I hope it is. Hopefully they'll teach me a better way to do it, if that's the case. But
So, Lou, I'm under the impression that card counting is not illegal.
It is not.
And there's this impression that it's illegal, but I mean, card counting is also just counting by any other name, and I don't think you can make it illegal to count.
No, but they don't have to let you play. And that's a thing.
But that's different, though, right?
Yeah,
that's
exactly. Different. That's what they do. What they'll do is they'll lock you down at a certain bet. And so if they think you're counting, they're going to make you do that one bet the entire time. You can't up your bet later on at the end of the shoe because the cards are more valuable.
Look, the only thing you need to do in order to get around the issue of card counting is that, you know, don't bet a dollar and then allow them then to bet a million, and you're fine. So as long as you keep it within a relatively narrow range, and of course people like to up the bet when they think they're being lucky, etc. And yeah, you know, keep that in place. But in order for card counting to actually really work, you do need to have quite wild swings. And just stop them doing the wild swings. It's not rocket science.
Oh no.
Well, speaking of gambling, our episode tonight is Maverick.
Maverick.
There was a certain lack of Mel Gibson in this, wasn't there?
A joyous lack of Mel Gibson.
Well, anyway. So, yeah, I'll learn it. And then what's also funny is they do a single or double shoe, a double deck shoe. So, you know, now it's much easier to count when there's only a single deck of cards in there. So, but we'll see. I'm looking forward to starting that next week.
That's also the thing, by the way. There's no reason why you shouldn't just have, I mean, you say a double deck, but have an infinite deck. Have a 50 deck.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as you do that, the effect of how you're drawing the cards is, you know, basically the tail can't wag the dog because there's still too much of the dog left.
Yeah.
So, you know, just make them a bigger deck. It's again, it's not rocket science.
No, it
but
ain't.
This thing is perfect. This has entered into public culture as being like, oh yeah, it's such a big deal, and you can break the bank, and they can't stop you. I mean, it's really, I think it's overplayed.
No, I think that if you have that ability to be able to count cards like that, I think you deserve to win because that is a skill.
Of course, yes, but you know, if they're overskilled, and it's not really overskilled, it's I can't think of the word it is, what they call it.
Actually, I'm pretty sure that the casino industry has made more money out of people thinking that they can count cards than they've lost through people counting cards.
Oh, man.
I mean, almost certain.
You got to go to YouTube and look at that MIT group that took the casinos for millions and millions because they figured out how to count the cards and...
Yeah. Sure. I mean, and also they made a film of that as well.
But yeah.
Millions and millions compared to what I'm sure is a multi-billion dollar industry is nothing. It's change. It's,
you know,
the amount, I'll guarantee you that the film made more money for the people involved than they ever got from card counting. I'm sure they made more money that way.
Fascinating. Okay, so anyway, thank you guys for coming on tonight, so we better get going. All right, so the synopsis for tonight's show is after a computer malfunction, Worf and his son Alexander Rozhenko, as well as Counselor Troy, are trapped in an Old West holodeck program where the interactive characters physically resemble and have the same enhanced abilities as Data.
How does that work?
Could this be another holodeck gone wrong episode? This is the 8th episode of season 6 of Star Trek: The Next Generation. First aired on November 9th, 1992. It was written by... Well, teleplay by Robert Hewitt Wolf and Brannon Braga, with the story play by Robert Hewitt Wolf and directed by Sir Patrick Stewart, who wasn't a sir at the time, but is today. Guest stars include Brian Bonsall as Alexander Rozhenko, John Piper Ferguson as Eli Hollander, Joy Garrett as Annie Myers, ba-boom, George... Cervera Jr. as Bandito. Anyway. we have, and then finally, Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer. Oh, don't forget Brandy is Spot and Bud is Spot, by the way. Two different Spots for one episode. No, wait, there's Monster for Spot. Three Spots in one episode. It took three Spots to do one episode.
He was only in one scene.
Right. Yeah, it's. I guess that was important. You know, Spot over there, Spot over here, Spot, Spot, Pop. Everywhere a Spot. If you could spot the different Spots. What do we think about this episode? Okay, I'm going to start it off by saying this is a tough one to judge because on the one hand, yeah, it's really stupid. A bunch of data has taken over the holodeck, yeah. But on the other hand, it's kind of hilarious with a bunch of data has taken over the holodeck. And, you know, and I think the intent, when I just consider the intent of the episode, that's lighthearted humor and a chance to torture Worf. It can't be wrong. It's good. So, Matt, what about you? What are your initial thoughts are?
I had remembered this episode being somewhat hokey, yeah. So I wasn't sure going into it if I was going to enjoy it again, but I found that it was actually better than I remember it being. So it was a non-consequential episode. Nothing really happens, but it was fun to watch.
Okay. All right. Chris, how about you?
Oh, this is by far my favorite episode of TNG. I love this episode. I think it's wonderful. So, there you go.
Of all times.
I believe so, sir. It's the one I put on the most often. And that's kind of how I judge what my favorite is.
Wow, all right. So it goes on car rides for you.
I don't listen to audio of episodes, but, I mean, it's in my Netflix. I've watched it probably four times on there.
Yeah, that's funny is... I actually have these episodes on my home network.
I know.
This one's missing.
I've heard.
Yeah.
Oh, this one's missing?
It's missing. I couldn't find it. So actually I had to watch it on Netflix. I don't understand what happened to it. But yeah, it's missing.
It probably got worn out for too much watching, Lou.
Oh, that's other things. What about you, Doc? What's your thoughts on this one?
This isn't good. Hang on, Chris, are you... I mean, you must be joking, right? You're joking.
Oh, no!
No, I'm really not joking. I really love this episode.
Our guest.
What?
This episode's so much fun.
I can't... I don't get into it. I can't quite relate to it. I don't particularly like Worf in this episode, and it's very Worf-centric.
Oh, yeah, Worf's a jacket.
I'm confused as to why... Troy has just decided to turn up and knows everything about the quote ancient West. Actually, being not from America, I actually don't really have that much enthusiasm to watch Westerns full stop. It does nothing for me. And this episode about, you know, Data getting a little bit of his programming overridden and some of it going to the holodeck, it just seems a little bit stupid. Now, as I'm saying this, I'm now thinking about that, you know, they had that episode on DS9 called Armand Bashir, which I suspect is exactly the same episode, but just done in DS9 with Bashir and James Bond. Yeah, that's a great episode. So maybe I've been a complete hypocrite here.
Well, you love James Bond, right? Or you like it, at least.
For you. At least I'm not completely agnostic. And also, right. You know, Kira's in a dress, right?
I mean, that doesn't hurt things, ever. But...
No, never. Boy, Matt, you know, you and I could just sit back and let them two have it. This could be fun.
Oh, I'm just along for the ride.
I was going to say, this could be interesting. Okay, so, So the ship's in orbit, hanging around for about 48 hours until another ship joins them. And what are we going to do today? How about some flute time? Let's get a little flute time in, if possible. So great I thought callback. It was kind of funny, is that, you know, I'm sorry?
Great callback.
Yep, great callback is right. And he's getting better at it, too.
I like it when they bring it back to him playing the flute. That's, I like the reference to past episodes like that.
They do a couple of those in this episode. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you can see him getting increasingly agitated every time the door chime hits. I mean, he couldn't put the Do Not Disturb on. Anyway,
The guys would have been running into each other as they left. As well.
I mean, I thought that.
Crusher, like, your turn.
Yeah, Crusher, your turn.
No, I've been under the straw in this episode as well. She gets barely no screen time.
I'm okay with that because they do non-sexy Troy, and she actually gets to do something decent. So I'm kind of okay with it for this episode.
Hold on. You said non-sexy Troy because I thought she looked pretty smashing, actually.
No, I mean, she looks beautiful, but she's not being played up as a sex object. Like,
oh,
she
has. Gotcha. You got that right.
Yeah. Not in front of Alexandra, anyway.
Well, it wasn't Troy.
Uh-uh.
Another woman on the balcony. To past episodes.
Yeah, the woman on the balcony. I mean, in the little short shorts. She came mighty close to revealing some things. I'm telling you, that was damn close. And, you know, what the hell is that? You know,
I'll talk with Mr. Broccoli.
Yeah, nice shout out for Barkley. That was.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I kind of wish he'd been in this episode too.
He was at the end, probably an unedited version of discussion with Worf, on air or you know, cutting room floor. So, but anyway, James, I thought the same thing, you know, by the time Crusher walked out of there, she should have ran into Worf and said, I would not go in there if I were you. But, whatever. Anyway. So, here's a good idea. Let's use Data as a backup for the computer. What was the point of this? I mean, was it in case we're all dead, then Data can access a computer and get things done a lot faster than us pushing the buttons?
So this is such a stupid idea, because within Picard's memory, he must remember when, you know, Data went crazy or Data's gone bad. I mean, he's gone bad like about 4 or 5 times. And then the idea that Data, with the potential of going bad, will actually run the computer and run operations, including things like life support and stuff, it's like, what? They are so playing with fire here, and they don't seem to be aware of it, that it's a little bit funny. And when they do plug him in and they start playing around with things, the first thing they play around with is artificial gravity. And you think, what? Yeah. I mean, no, don't do that. I mean, by all means, what would be a not particularly bad thing to lose? I don't know. Maybe Riker's, holodeck program or something like that. But artificial gravity.
Well, that's a good point, because that was a secondary system.
Yeah.
That was one of the non-critical gravitational. It seemed like that would be more of a high priority.
Well, especially because, when you talk about artificial gravity, you get the impression that artificial gravity, right, goes from there's no gravity, so you're floating around happy, to there's a little bit of gravity where you're then stuck against the floor. No one ever thinks about the 50 times hypergravity when you're basically soup on the bottom of the carpet. And why would you then assume that that's a secondary system?
I'm going to guarantee you that the writers of this episode didn't think about the 50 times gravity where you're soup on the floor. I pretty much promise that.
Well, yeah.
Of course, I also got thinking about the whole plugging Data into the computer, and I'm thinking, didn't they do this already? When was it, a disaster where they took just his head and plugged him into the computer to? So like they've already done this,
but it worked. Then it actually saved the ship and saved the warp core from blowing up.
And that might have been when they realized, hey, we could really use you as like a computer backup system.
So they gave it a try and decided, no, let's not do that anymore. Because you never do that again.
I have a question to the group. Who's more sophisticated, or what's more powerful, Data or the Enterprise computer?
The Enterprise computer.
Because it appears in this episode that Data can take over the computer's role, but also Data's ability can be transferred over to the holodeck. It's almost like it's completely reciprocal. I mean, frankly, I didn't think they thought this through.
No. I don't think so either.
Nor do they need to. It's simply a conceit to have fun in the holiday.
I think so. No, I think that's exactly right.
I'll go with that, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there's any reason to really think this through. It's that's why Data shows up everywhere, including the woman who's rubbing up against him. So I mean, it's not intending to be serious. You know, decks 4 through 9 replicators are only producing cat food. I mean, that's not earth shattering.
let me ask a question, and this is an honest question here. Yeah, every now and again we have one of these silly episodes, right? Whether it's the James Bond or whether it's the Western and stuff. And we had it in TNG, and whenever you had it in TNG, I think I'm going to say without exception, but actually no, that's not true. When we had the Irish episode, we managed to find Irish people out in space.
Right.
But generally, you go to the holodeck, whereas in the original series, you generally found a planet that had the similar evolution as Earth, but just, you know, Romans or Nazis.
The Nazis is the best one.
Yeah. So which one is worse? Which one's a greater crime to, you know, keeping you invested in the program? The holodeck or the finding the alternative Earth?
I think when when done correctly, holodefecation episodes can be fantastic.
Yes, it can. I wonder how they got away with the Nazi episode back then.
What, you don't like Nazis, Lou?
No, I'm saying I'm curious how they would have gotten away with that Nazi episode
in the 60s.
Yeah,
I mean they were making World War II 60s, movies at 70s. That time, so why couldn't you?
I don't know. It just seemed like it was pretty risky. I don't know.
No, cheap use of existing costumes and sets.
Yeah. Okay, so was it my imagination, or did Patrick Stewart actually say he's not much of an actor?
No, he definitely said that. And I think that was a great little joke as well.
Oh, it's hilarious. Oh, yeah, because, you know, Patrick is awesome at everything he does. So that's the fourth wall. Yeah, yeah.
Well, of course, then Crusher shoots him right down immediately. Oh, you wouldn't be playing a big part, obviously.
That's it. You're not playing it. Yeah, it's two lines. It is? What? Yeah, but he goes from, no, I'm not doing that. I'm really not much of an actor, too. I'm a bit part. Are you serious? That's it.
Speaking of the play, though, has the Riker episode where he goes crazy happened yet?
No, not yet.
I'd be on that one. I like that episode, too. What's I think the this season is
Frame of Mind.
Frame of Mind.
I like that.
And towards the end of 6.
Season 6 might be my favorite season.
But isn't season 6 generally considered to be the worst?
Maybe. Think...
Could be.
Oh, when I say the worst, I don't mean the worst. I mean the worst since 3. So since it was good. So you obviously had the first and the second season, and then it got good.
They're in a category all by themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, that like, you know, the things we don't talk about. I was under the impression that not most people, and obviously not the man in the street, because they didn't have an opinion on this. But I thought that there was a general consensus that it kind of peaked at 5 and then came down at 6. And maybe even 7's not that great if you exclude, you know, Parallels and all good things.
Lower Decks.
Lower Decks is great, isn't it? I like Lower Decks.
Yeah, I don't love season 7, but I like season 6. I think they're resting on their laurels a little bit in season 6, and they do a lot of episodes like this where they're just like contained and they don't have some like overarching big thing that they've had in the previous seasons between 3 and 5. But I still think it's fun. Starts with Time Zero and just kind of rides on through, rides the wave of popularity.
Actually, I have to say, I think it was a season 6 episode that was the final Star Trek TNG episode I ever saw. So, you know, when you're watching it and you're trying to keep up. I remember that I was buying the VHS cassettes and it started with Timescape. So I basically had everything from Timescape onwards. And then I had watched a significant chunk of it from like season 2-ish through to like 5.5-ish. But season 6 kind of stayed this zone where I wasn't really watching that much. And I remember, I think the final episode that I saw of TNG was the Geordi episode, what's it called, Aquiel? There's one to go out on.
Oh, Aquiel.
Yeah. There are some low lows in 6, I guess. We won't talk about those. This one is not a low, Doc. I'm just going to have to... I'm going to send you some good westerns and show you why the genre is actually fun. And then maybe you can come back to this one and enjoy it for the silly shenanigans.
Good. Hey, Chris, question for you about Frame of Mind. And remember, this might not be edited, you know. Sometimes I just put it out there. Do you have any objections to coming on with Mark Stamper?
Absolutely not. I would love to.
There you go.
What a caveat, Lou.
I don't know why he's going to answer that.
I think every time I've been supposed to be on an episode with Mark Stamper, he has either fallen off or I have not been able to make it. So go ahead and plan that, and we'll see. We'll see if the curse continues.
You got it. You got it. All right, we'll do that.
My money's on the curse.
Really? Yeah, I haven't heard from Mark for a while, so. But we'll see. I mean, that is about a year away, so don't worry about it. Okay, so.
Six episodes.
Get this out of the way.
So, yeah, about a year.
Yeah, about a year ago. Let's see here.
By the way, okay, so, basically, just for the guests, you know, we have just transitioned this from a podcast to a meet-up on Friday for our own amusement. We've actually done this season already twice, and we just keep coming back and finding new guests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well. So, Alexander, how cute, huh? You know, what? Saddled up, father. Okay, hold on. The last episode Alexander was on was to help take over the ship from the Ferengi, so he actually had a purpose. What do you think about this one?
He's dreadful, and he made me glad that my boys are now older than this little guy, so that they're never going to approach me with a saddle up. So,
well, even Worf is trying to find any excuse to not have to spend time with him.
Yeah, Worf's a bad dad. Worf's bad at almost everything he does, I think. But right. Fatherhood is definitely not his strong suit.
Yeah, I think Brian probably does a little better later in life, because you could see he's desperately staring at the cue cards, reading the lines just like that. So we'll see.
So, Lou. Whenever we bring up the issue of Alexander and the actor that plays Alexander, you always bring up the fact that he got arrested. So when you're now saying he got better later in life, all I'm thinking about is his mugshot that you found for us one time.
Oh, that's right. Yes, he did get arrested. That's right. I forgot about that.
Don't be judgmental.
Okay, no, I'm not judgmental. Okay, actually, he is in a movie that I remember seeing a long time ago called Blank Check. When my daughter was younger, she used to like that movie. And it's a pretty good movie. A kid finds a million-dollar check, makes it out to himself, and becomes a millionaire. Ta-da! Anyway.
they wouldn't really cash that, though.
Of course not. But, you know, on TV they do.
I mean, not without ID.
No. No, of course not. No.
I mean, the anti-money laundering regulations at the moment really have prevented that movie being able to, like, stay within the public consciousness. Post-financial crisis. But there we are.
I had to throw some cold water on this, Doc.
Yeah, really. I go through money laundering training twice a year in the casino, so yeah, tell me about it.
I can't imagine Doc, like, being confronted with, like, Baby's Day Out. Like, he'd get real, like, huffy about how this is just unacceptable. This never would happen. There's no way a baby can crawl across a crossbeam as they're building this giant 12-story building.
Yeah, no, of course not. You know, I was thinking when I was telling you guys about the new job in the casino, and I'll get back to Doc. I'll swing back to Doc, believe me. It's coming. But I always said when I was doing retail surveillance that I would love to be a fly on the wall at a casino surveillance room just to see what it is they've got and what it is they do. And now I'm going to actually be able to see that, so I thought my nickname should be Fly. However, I would actually like to be a fly on the wall in Doc's house. What about you guys? Are you with me on this?
This could get weird. No, I don't know if I'm with you on this. I don't know.
Where are you going with this?
I just would love to see James's interaction with his family, with all those kids. And, you know, let's face it, sometimes I get frustrated with just one kid. But as many as he has, I would just love to see James, Daddy James, with all those kids. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, maybe I could get some pointers, because I don't know that I'm doing a great job myself.
Hey, I don't know either. You know, I don't know what to do. I can't get her to stop speeding or eating food in the car or talking on the phone or using the phone while she's driving. We've tried everything.
Sorry, speeding. How old's your daughter?
17. We have a program called Life 360. It's an app on our phones that tell each other where everybody's at.
Oh, so we use it too. Yeah.
Oh, love Life 360. Well, I pay for the enhanced one that tells me if she's speeding, hard braking, rapid acceleration, phone usage, and so on. And it said last night on our way home, she was driving 85 miles an hour in a 65 mile an hour zone. And I'm thinking, you know what the ticket on that would be? It'd be phenomenal, huge. So I think what we're going to start doing is we're going to fine her. Every time she does that, she's going to start paying a fine. But don't tell her this. We're going to put the money in a box. I know, but she doesn't ever want to listen to the show. It's going to go in a box. And then when she moves out, I'm going to hand her that box. So I think that would be helpful. But in the meantime, she's going to think she's getting screwed. But maybe after paying a few fines, she'll calm down.
Not sure, Lou, but I'm pretty positive there's a Black Mirror episode about this. Have you not seen Black Mirror yet?
No,
I don't. You have to watch. You only have to watch one episode, just the Star Trek episode.
Yeah.
Black Mirror Star Trek episode?
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
You already?
Yeah. What?
It's from the UK.
Is it the what is it called? The Callister, USS Callister.
Okay. Black Mirror, USS Callister. Okay, I'll check it out. Anyway, so where are we?
Well, I could see a problem with your plan could backfire there, because one, she'll either be a really safe driver and there'll be nothing in the box when you give it to her. Or the box will be full, but it proves that she is a terrible, terrible driver.
And you're just rewarding her.
Yeah, no kidding. It, you know, maybe instead of putting the picture of the episode for our thumbnail, I should put a picture of the back of her car, and you'll see she's not a very, very safe driver.
I think you should maybe put it in the box, but then, like, the caveat is when you get a ticket, it's paid out of this box. If you don't ever get a ticket, then, you know, you can have whatever's left.
No, because it's her money. So if she makes money, and if she violates something, she puts her money into that box. She's going to think it's going to us, but then when she moves out, she's going to get that box back and everything in it. So that would be hers. So she'll actually get paying herself. It's just until that day, she's going to think she's paying fines.
So, but why did you just keep the box?
Money. No.
It sounds like this is a lose-lose here.
Yeah, definitely.
You're giving away money, and you're also losing any leverage you had over the fining.
Well, she won't be moving out for years anyway, so it'll be a while.
Well, I plan to kick the kids out immediately.
Oh, yeah, 18, you're gone.
Yep.
Yeah. 19 in Nebraska. You can't. You're not on your own until near 19 here. So, anyway, saddle up, father. What?
19?
Yeah, you're an adult, but you can't. You can't legally be on your own until you're 19 in Nebraska.
So when you say legally not allowed on, as in they're not allowed to live away from the house, or you can't make them homeless?
Yeah, I think that's the second one. You can't kick them out. I don't think they could legally sign a rental agreement until they're 19 here.
Really?
Hmm.
Yeah.
So hang on. So you can drive before you can sign a rental agreement?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No.
You can drive long before you can rent a car.
Right. You can drive
10 years before I could rent a car.
That doesn't make logical sense.
James, you can drive before you can sign a rental agreement. You can fight in a war before you sign a legal agreement. But you can't drink until you're 21. So you can smoke when you're 18. You can go to war when you're 18. But you can't drink while you're there.
So, and I think in most states, you can't even rent a car until you're like 24.
Right. Yeah, I think that's rental rules, but
yeah,
maybe. So today's holodeck program of Deadwood, South Dakota.
Yay, we made it through the prologue.
Yeah, yes, we did. Finally. So Worf is the sheriff, and Alexander is, of course, the deputy. And since the holodeck is perfect in every way, we know nothing's going to go wrong here. Okay, so we've already talked about Barkley and the woman in her shorts.
Let me mention real quick. We mentioned it earlier. I was reading reading on Memory Alpha some trivia for this episode, and it said that in the original script, Marina Sirtis was supposed to play the dancing girl from the saloon instead of the stranger. So that would have been Troy's part, that girl on the balcony.
Hoo-hoo.
Automatically would have dropped this episode for me a couple notches.
Okay, so let's hook up Data to the system and see how this goes. But first, before we do that, let's go back. Let's go back to the holodeck. Eli Hollander. At first, he gets his lights knocked out by Worf. That was pretty cool. He walks in, bam, bam! No, no, no! Freeze program! Alexander actually sounded drunk in this episode.
Well, there was some syncing issues too with his lips and his voice. Every time I watch it, I'm like, this is not matching up real well.
Mm-mm. Oh, that's what it was. I thought something seemed off.
Is real bad.
Yeah. No, no, no. Computer freeze program.
Kid actor.
Increased difficulty to level 4. 4. Worf has been like, computer, 8.
How many levels is... How hard could you make this, I wonder?
I don't know, but the second time seemed pretty scary, though. Got a little scary. Got a little tense.
Like, I would have loved exactly... it. I would have loved it if Worf had just walked right up and sacked the guy again.
Or tried and got hit back instead. That would have been cool. But it did get pretty tense. Looked like Worf was actually getting shut down until the stranger comes along.
I think it would have made it even funnier if Worf would have died, like, in the game. And then you see, like, the Jumanji-esque, like, respawn thing, and he's like, what happened?
Okay, that was too hard. Level 3.
Level 3.
So, by the way, if the holodeck, and, you know, running these programs like this on the holodeck is supposed to be where we're ended up in, you know, with the computer and video games at the moment, most people should know that you don't have difficulty level 4, right? I mean, I would imagine that Alexander would have said, oh, no, let's up the difficulty level to hurt me plenty, or whatever it happens to be. I don't know, level 4. What a load of nonsense.
Yeah, the Star Trek writers were not taking full advantage of, like, game. Well, I don't know. Back in, when was this put out? 90 whatever? They might have still been on level 4, level 5, instead of hurt me plenty.
Hurt me plenty.
Let's see. Aired November of
92. Yep. Okay. So anyway. So Eli Hollander killed 23 men. And he gets a drop on Worf, of course, because Worf's busy beating the crap out of everyone. Which is always cool to watch. Where do you think they always learn those moves from? You know, the boom bam ding with your elbow in your hand and the up thrust to the chin.
I think they watch a lot of videos of Captain Kirk.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
But it wasn't the double-fisted overhand punch.
No, Worf's mastered, like, small parts of it, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a standard operating procedure to watch Captain Kirk in a fight. That, you know, this is what you have to do. So, anyway, Worf's beating the crap out of everyone until Eli gets the drop on him. And that's when the tension grows. Until the mysterious stranger shows up and shoots a hat off the bad guy.
Oh, hang on. One thing before we get to that. Was anyone else bothered by the fact that the pianist wasn't actually playing the music that was being played in the background?
No, none of us are pedants.
I never noticed.
Never noticed.
No, I wasn't looking at the piano.
Oh, it was a million miles away. Anyway, of carry on.
Well, that was the other thing, too. I noticed the scene in the bar is playing for a full, like, 30 seconds before they even approach the door. So I'm wondering, does the holodeck just play all this stuff even when nobody's there to witness it?
Yeah, yeah. And if you think about projecting into the future, imagine the writers of that scene putting down their art, which no one will ever hear. I mean, it's like an Easter egg. You'd have to run to the to the bar. Most people playing the game would never even hear this.
Mm-mm. No.
I would imagine it would be a loop, right? So there's like a loop of music that's going to be played by that guy, and he just kind of goes through it again and again, right? Like,
But But then, too, when Alexander says, go back to right when we walk in the door, and it rewinds back to 30 seconds before they walk in.
Right. Yep. And they have to walk back to the door, go back out, turn around, come back. So anyway.
Okay. Anyway.
So Alexander says, I asked Deanna to join us. So maybe she did a little, you know, research on this. But
no, she explains why she knows all this stuff and why she likes it. Her dad, who is Earth man, read her westerns when she was a kid. I thought it was a nice little nod to some of her backstory, that she's half human. And of course her dad would like westerns, right? Because all Star Trek people like things from this time period.
Mm-hmm.
But it does make you wonder why it didn't come up earlier in that Time Zero episode or anything.
Is it a thing to be read a Western? Is that a thing?
Yeah. Louis L'Amour wrote lots of Westerns. Like, I could read my children Westerns right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sure. Although I never understood why Star Trek always uses classical music. What's wrong with the little Twisted Sister?
It costs too much money. But
I guess.
I would imagine that she would have probably watched more Westerns than she listened to, though, at that point, especially with the way society's going now. You knew how hard it was to get a book in a kid's hand?
God. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And it's worse today. Okay. So, anyway, go on.
Hey, just a question. When does Old West become Ancient West?
I don't know of Ancient West. I don't know what that means, Ancient West.
I think around World War III.
Ah! Nah. 23 million people dead. Anyway.
Yeah, so, but how long does it take for things to become ancient history?
I don't know.
My oldie station is playing things from the 80s. That is an oldie.
Rightfully so.
All right. So Data seems to be having a great time accessing the systems until all of a sudden there's a glitch.
Yeah, gravitational controller really took it out of him.
Yep. Poor guy. He was running a diagnostic on something, I believe. So they unplug him from the system.
I would always imagine, by the way, I mean, this is just completely off topic. I would always imagine that gravitation, artificial gravity, would be a hardware solution rather than a software solution. I mean, doesn't it seem like much more robust for it to be a hardware solution? So what would you need to run to control gravitational stuff? I don't know.
I always thought it was in the deck.
Yeah, I mean, as in you sticky carpet kind of thing.
Sticky?
Yeah. Well, no. I always thought there was some kind of gravitational pull from the deck.
That's what I mean. Sticky carpet. There's something in the deck that will induce
a walk around the field. Yeah, they don't walk around going.
No, he just means that you stick to it, not like stuck like dumb.
No, when I say sticky carpet, I'll say the same thing like sticky earth. Sticky earth pulls you down to earth. Stickier.
I don't know.
It's a Britishism, I think.
Yeah, it's not. I've never heard of sticky earth.
We don't really say sticky to talk about like us being.
Have you tried to escape from the earth recently? It's pretty sticky.
No. Yeah. Jump real high. Nope, can't do that.
Jump higher.
Yeah. So you don't really have to be in touch with the ground to actually do it, because if you were to jump, would they just float off then? No, it brings him back down. You're right. Is that a software thing or a hardware thing?
To be clear, I'm not talking about actual suction or anything like that.
I'm talking
about gravity. So, you know, the fact that you jump up doesn't mean you fly off. It means that you're still within the gravitational potential.
Right.
It doesn't matter. It's only a TV show.
It's only a TV show? No. Are you serious? I thought these were historical documents. Anyway.
Okay.
Counselor Durango.
Yeah, shouldn't Alexander have mentioned, hey, Troy might be stopping by?
Might have slipped his mind. He's 8.
Yeah, is he? I don't remember.
Counselor Troy might be stopping by. Say, will you please wear some pants?
Anyway, Counselor Durango is looking pretty hot. Are, yeah, right.
They're holographic pants.
So let's see. Data's Now, things are starting to go wrong on the ship. Data's poetry seems to have taken over Beverly's play.
Okay, that bothered me. And the reason why Felix it bothered me...
Felix Cantus.
Yeah, it's too early to make the reference, right? Now, we've been on this... Every other episode has had like a three-week hiatus between them. And it's still extremely clear to me as when they had the Felix Cantus. So it's too early for them to reference it. They should have referenced it further in the future.
I don't know that it is too early to reference it. If it happened in the past, then you can use it.
It happened like 3 weeks ago.
Also, I mean, it's real funny. It's real that he's like trying to do this great dramatic reading.
No. As I mentioned on the episode, what episode was that? That was I've lost it now. But as I mentioned on that episode, I thought it was a good episode, and I really liked the poem. But them referencing it again, like 3 weeks later, it makes me think that they were very, very happy with what they had written. That's what it came across as.
They should have written another one for this.
Yeah.
Say it's another one of Data's poems.
Yeah, but we all know Data's poems. It's people had to suffer through Data's poem. That's why probably what makes it funny is the fact that, you know, Riker sees it up front and... You know, it has that look on his face like, okay, here we go.
His reaction is one of the best.
He was sleeping, though, at the time, right? Because it was schisms.
Yes.
Also, he didn't hear it the first time.
Yeah, he's just reading it like it's what she was supposed to have. And she's like, wait, no, that's not. That is great. I like it.
Yeah, what are you doing?
I do get it, though, Doc.
It's lines. I mean, he's serious. It's lines. Like, he was really going to do Felix Cantus.
I love the expression on his face, though, when he reads it. You know that. Oh, okay then.
Guess this is what we're doing.
Yeah,
let's throw the best up on something and recite the rest of this.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, you have to take the job that's given.
Lou,
is everybody there?
Everyone's here. I think we've just broken Lou.
He just disappeared. I mean, we could rip on Riker some more.
I don't believe this. I've been talking to you guys and I was on mute. How did I get on mute? No wonder why everybody keeps interrupting me, damn it. Okay, so I don't know. Last thing I said, if you had heard it or not, is I think Riker knew it was wrong from the start. It was a wrong play. He just kind of played along with it.
Oh, yeah.
So, but until she's like, no, come on, what are you doing? Oh, yeah, oh, that's a line. So she freaks out. What? No, where is it? It's gone. So Data, Geordi working on that pad. Wasn't that kind of funny when he puts that little, he's trying to play like it's going into something, and all of a sudden that little memory stick pops off, and he just sets it back down. Did you notice that?
No, where it looked like he was trying to slide it into a slot, but it
popped out.
Wasn't in the grooves.
No, wasn't in the grooves. So he just kind of sets it down, and they pull the camera up real quick. Like, oh, damn it, LaVar, you screwed that up. No. Let's just go on. We don't need to redo that. Okay. So,
do you think with Data, he has like USB connections where you have to try to plug it in, fail, turn it around, try again, fail, and then turn it around for a second time to realize that you've managed to enter into the fourth dimension and it now works.
I don't know, man. I feel like super there's a fuzzy bit on the end of that line.
Plug and play? Is Data plug and play?
Yeah, I thought about that. I would have hoped that Data was Bluetooth compatible, but apparently not.
Hard line only.
You're right.
Fully functional. Yes.
Yeah, and you have to press little parts of his head to get certain parts. Well, I tell you, Data, after all this time, it's still hard to look at you like this. Okay. All right, so anyway.
I when he said that line, it made me think of, like, the barber trying to cut a child's hair, because Data just kept moving his head while Geordi was trying to do this thing. Hmm. I'm just like, Data, hold your head still.
Okay. Okay, so meanwhile, back on the holodeck, Deputy Alexander's returning from the brink when he gets abducted. Apparently earlier than he's supposed to. Computer freeze program. It doesn't work. It doesn't freeze. And here we go. Data. The big reveal is Data is the bad guy's father, Frank Eli. No, Frank Hollander. So he doesn't say, Commander, what are you doing here? And it's not till later. So I think about now is where you get the idea. This is a little concerning. This is something's happening here. Even Data slinging that tricorder into his pouch. That's funny.
Oh, yeah, and the walk he does afterwards. He does a walk two times in this episode that just cracks me up every time.
He's definitely... Yeah, when he was leaving the conference room.
Yeah. That's the best one, because he really, like, throws on the saddle swagger. It's awful.
Right into the plants. And he does... What's funny is he doesn't know what's happening.
Yeah, that part's a little silly, right? That he doesn't seem to remember. My memory engrams don't have any blah, blah, blah about this. Okay,
yeah, oh, must be mistaken.
It's as if he doesn't have
ears. I did what?
Go ahead, James. He did. It's almost what?
No, he pretends that he doesn't have ears. So he can say something, and by all means, he might have said something that he didn't intend to say, but he can hear himself saying something he didn't intend to say. So this idea that, I didn't say that. Come off it.
Yeah, it's silly.
Well, how else is he going to say, y'all must be mistaken? So, anyway, I said that three times now. Let's go on. So, Worf is in the bar trying to get a drink when Data walks in, or, you know, Frank, and announces his name as Mr. Hollander. So, do you figure Worf just thinks that, looks like Data decided to play along? I mean, he does say... Commander, the name's Hollander, Frank Hollander. Oh, okay, yeah, go ahead. Okay, fine. Worf tries to walk past him, but Data almost breaks his shoulder. Oh, Commander! Now you know it's not Data. It's not really Data, and the computer won't stop the program.
Well, it could be Data. He's just, you know, turned evil again.
Again.
Like he does.
Yeah. Worf tries to make a run for it, and he gets shot in the arm for it.
Data shot the sheriff. But they did not kill the deputy.
Not yet. He didn't hurt the deputy yet.
Guess we could have said, but they kidnapped the deputy.
Right. James, you know that song, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, Bob Marley's pretty big over there.
But in the 60s, maybe.
Wait a second. Yeah, that's
Bob Marley did my favorite version of it, but yes, it was another... Yeah, and I think that originally. Is that a Beatles song? No.
No. Is it Clapton?
Okay, there you go.
I think so. But here's the thing I never understood. He admits to shooting the sheriff, but why is he going to lie about the deputy?
He's not lying about the deputy.
So did the sheriff live and the deputy die?
He's being honest. I definitely shot the sheriff, but it wasn't me to shot that deputy. I ain't taking the rap for that one.
That's a capital offense either way. So, yeah, because they say it is a capital offense. Still, if he shot the sheriff, he's facing the same capital offense. Unless the sheriff lived and the deputy died. So who shot the deputy?
Maybe he just wants to make sure that the truth gets out.
That's right.
Hmm.
It's about and truthfulness and honesty.
All of that because the sheriff... Covers. He went through all that because the sheriff didn't want him to grow marijuana. That's funny. Anyway.
Well, he said it was in self-defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was in self-defense, yeah. They were trying to take my pot.
Great documentary on Netflix called Murder Mountain. It's sort of like this. Anyway, what happened in the episode? We're 2 hours.
Oh, no, we're out. Thanks a lot. Here, Netflix, Murder Mountain.
Oh, God.
I'm just putting these on standby.
Reminder to
check
self,
later.
Do not tell Lou to do anything during the podcast. Just keep not.
He's watching the Callister episode as we're talking.
Yeah. No, that's the next window over. So anyways, wasn't really Data the guys shoot Worf. The assumption is the computer's making a lot of characters of Data. And of course it was Troy who said, wait a minute. He was shuffling those cards just like Data. He must have Data's strength.
That's a bit of a leap. I think that's his reach in there.
Well, Worf already knew that.
Yeah. Yeah, Worf, yeah, Data just almost broke his shoulder. Then they shot him in the arm.
Yeah, but from Worf's perspective, what he should really be saying is like, oh, no, I fought Data. It's at least 5 times as strong as Data. Yeah, that's why I got my butt kicked. 5 times as strong.
Hey, level 4 Data. That was a level 4 Data. Alrighty. So, in the sheriff's office, did you notice that when Data was talking to himself? Okay, so Frank is talking to Eli. That was a pretty good, I don't know how they did, split screen, you know, so Data could be on both sides of the bar talking, and you could see, obviously, they probably filmed one side earlier, if Eli is Data's talking and he's reacting.
They didn't clone Brent's bike. So
no. But
it's either that or the film in two sides.
How do you know they didn't clone Brent Spiner? I want. Yeah.
Well, they brought back the actor that played Lore.
Yes, they did.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, that's it.
He's been out of work.
Isn't he floating in space still? But when he walks away from the cage, oh my god, the stand-in they chose for Data was just terrible.
What, the mannequin?
It wasn't a mannequin because you could see his eyes blink.
Oh.
I thought it was a mannequin too, but you see his eyes blink. It's just a terrible, terrible stand-in. I said, what the hell is that? But anyway.
No, but I thought the split screen was really good. It was very convincing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Worf decides the best way to play this out is to let it go. Play it out and let's end it. Let's do the exchange. Eli for the deputy. But then again, Troy just tried to explain, hold it, you don't get it. They're going to try and kill you. They always do the bad thing. They always cheat. So, how does Worf combat that? Wow. He MacGyvers himself a force field. Pretty ingenious, huh?
Yeah, I thought this was weak.
Yeah. Well, I think.
Likewise, and I was about to suggest, why didn't he just let the bad guy win? But now that I've just said this out loud, I just realized that's how they get out of Amman Bashir, right? They just let the guy win and destroy him.
Yeah, but in Amman Bashir, it's not the safety protocols aren't turned off as a part of as a conceit of the episode. And this one, the safety protocols are off. So conceivably, if he lets him win, then Worf legitimately really dies.
Probably.
It's his son, probably, first.
Yeah. Most likely. I was thinking that, too. Why doesn't he just open up the jail cell and say, all right, fine, leave, don't come back?
Because then they can kill his son.
Yeah, they still have Alexander.
Yep.
Oh.
And they will.
Okay.
The same reason he doesn't just shoot Data in the neck when he walks in the room to talk to his son, right? Like Eli's dad or whatever.
Oh, yeah, when he pulls out his gun and hands it to him?
Right. Because they still have Alexander. I'm telling y'all, this is an airtight script, yo. I don't know why y'all trying to break it down.
I hear you. Well, anyway, they do the trade, and of course, as you expect, Eli, get down! And they start...
I do appreciate that they didn't try to explain how this force field worked. They use the parts from a telegraph machine and they use the comm badges as a power source. That's about all of the information we got, and I think that was probably for the best.
It's like the scene in Looper where he's like, do you want me to use the straws and the forks to like lay out a grid of how time travel works and how all this is really true? And he's like, nah. And you're like, yeah, please just move on.
Did you say Looper?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't.
I've already done it.
That sounds
okay. Right. So the bad guys end up running out of bullets or something. It just doesn't work. And Sheriff Worf runs the Hollanders out of town. Mom, boy, let's go. And they leave.
What was the point of having that bandito on the roof with the shotgun taking aim?
But never shooting.
If you didn't shoot it.
No. The only thing he did is tossed another gun out to Frank. Señor Frank! And then, of course, a slow-motion gun.
This gun has the time to go from the roof of the building down to his hand before Worf even draws.
Oh, yeah. But Worf won. He outdrew Data. No,
yay, I don't know. And that's the moral of the story this week.
Worf outdrew Data. So everything has been repaired. The mission is proceeding as planned. And Alexander's laying on the floor saying, "You're never going to want to go again, are you, Dad?"
Oh, you never know. They might need us again. Blah, blah, blah. That's the end of the show.
Okay, I'm going to have to ask you guys a question, which is, is anyone here familiar with the British comedy, sci-fi comedy show called Red Dwarf?
Yeah, I watched the first couple of episodes with the cat. Okay.
With the cat and co. And actually, there's a Trek connection because Terry Farrell she was the cat in the pilot that they put on for the US TV, which went nowhere. But at the time that this aired in the UK, which I think it was even before this episode aired in the UK, an episode of Red Dwarf aired that was almost exactly the same in terms of the script. Not exactly the same, but the same concept, which is that individuals on a starship decide to have fun by going into a quote-unquote holodeck, and they kind of have fun within this, within this kind of like artificial construct of a gamified world. And it was slightly different because it's obviously not necessarily as family friendly. So they show that, people go into the computer game world and, they're able to have sex with the other characters that are there and they cheat their way past and they do all the things that you would imagine people would end up doing if they did have like the virtual reality tech in place. But there was a story where Patrick Stewart was in the UK and he was, channel surfing at the time, and he stumbled across that episode of Red Dwarf, and he then kind of thought, "Hang on, is this a serious show? And why does this look so much like Star Trek?" Which I thought was I found that interesting.
And then he directs this episode after he saw that.
No, he directed it. Technically, he did this a year before. Okay. So the Red Dwarf came out a year later, but we wouldn't have, the UK wouldn't have got that TNG episode until like a year later still. So you're in this world where it's aired in the US, it hasn't aired in the UK, but before it airs in the UK, this other thing airs. So conceivably, by the way, someone in the UK could have seen the TNG, put the show on for Red Dwarf, film it, release it, and it would have come to UK audiences before. Before the schedule had a fistful of Data's flow over. Actually, Red Dwarf is interesting because they also had the holographic Doctor before Voyager did. One of the main characters in there is a hologram.
There's actually an entry in Memory Alpha about that you were talking about. It says that when Patrick Stewart caught it on TV, he initially thought it was a dramatic series, and so he almost So he thought about that he needed to call his lawyers. It was after he watched a little bit more, he realized that it was a comedy show, and then he just started laughing about it.
Yeah.
All right. So there's another thing that I have to look up when we're done.
Red Dwarf.
Red Dwarf is worth it.
Okay. All right. Caught the word Red Dwarf episode, Gunman of the Apocalypse. Okay. So anyway, unless I forgot something, because we didn't get anything on the mission.
Oh, well, they met up with the supply ship, and they reset the computer back to the day before to scrub that stuff out. So.
Oh, that's it! I wanted to mention that. Yes, they did something on Data. Essentially, they restored him to a previous state. He actually even said that we restored him to a previous state. And I thought, my God, that sounds like, are you saying the Federation was using Microsoft Steady State? You guys ever use that?
Well, they did a backup on Data before the experiment, so yeah, they just they purged him and re-implemented that memory.
Yes, yeah, they just restored him to a earlier version. So anyway, that's what steady state is. You could do anything you want when the computer's running, and then when you reboot it, you wipe all changes. So I actually use that on a virtual XP. It's kind of cool, actually. So if I want to test out a website, you know, that I think is, you know, scam, then I just go back and redo it. So anyway.
And my last thought on that is the Vico was an Oberth class ship, like the Grissom was.
Yes.
It's a supply ship. That thing's tiny. Terrible, terrible for cargo.
Yeah, you're right there.
What were they doing? They were just hanging around waiting for it to turn up at Warp 2. Yeah. Was that?
They were late. They were delayed by 48 hours. And since we have nothing to do but hang around this planet that we never learned anything about for 48 hours, instead of just meeting the Vigo or whatever somewhere
They should have been en route. And if they're not going to be en route, you know, the chances are that they're going to meet at a planet very remote, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Space is big. If you're going to claim that I can't go too far out of my way, yeah, fine. But, you know, the gaps between planets is like 5 light years.
Yeah.
There's no reason to meet at a planet.
So what was this planet anyway?
It's a watering hole.
Ah, it must have been... But they didn't leave the ship. They just stayed on board.
You don't know what they were doing after this.
That's true.
Did they zoom off at the end of this episode?
They did.
They set off into the sunset.
Yeah. As the closing theme song was played on the harmonica. And that Western theme.
I missed that part.
Well, not so, the credits.
I like to think that they were maybe dropping off a crew member at that planet. And that other thing was coming to supply that planet. So, you know, just too much words.
All right.
That was a nice shot of the ship going off into the sunset. The lighting on that was excellent. It was a beautiful shot.
Well, yeah, I didn't get that far.
So watching it now, you don't know whether or not that's like a redone shot for the high definition remasters or whether it was always that nice.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, I don't know, actually. I don't know what Netflix would use.
Oh, they use the HD.
Yeah, they use the remasters.
Oh, okay.
Unless they're doing Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, hopefully they do.
They're not
there. What's wrong with Deep Space Nine?
It's not the... There's no HD remaster on it.
No, I know. I bought all of the Blu-rays on TNG and... Got TNG on Blu-ray, Enterprise, and TOS. And to think that we're missing DS9 on Blu-ray is kind of... It's a bit of a pill.
Well, maybe one day, if they can find a way to make it more cost-effective.
Actually, do you know what? We also have the animated series on Blu-ray.
Yep.
Yes.
And we have Discovery on Blu-ray. And we just don't have... I mean, I understand that... I think Voyager would be very hard to get onto Blu-ray. Because there's so much CG in it, and to an extent, a lot of CG at the tail end of DS9. But the first, like 3-4 seasons of DS9, it's still the equivalent of TNG. There's not really much they would. I don't think it's a huge effort. I mean, it's a huge effort, but come on, I want to give people money in order to get Blu-rays of DS9. Make it happen, people.
And if anybody's still into physical media, it's a Star Trek fan. All my buddies who are Star Trek fans around here, they're like, dude, physical media. And they're all computer guys, but they just don't buy into the everything should be digital. They believe that stuff you love should be physical.
Okay. All right, well, I think we should be going now and this show. And, you know, I just realized... Do you remember, James, a day when us and Upper Pylon 2 were kind of like even, neck and neck?
Yeah, I mean, yes. And I remember when we were 2.5 seasons ahead.
Ahead. Yeah. And then we ended up even. And I thought maybe we could just at least stay with them. And of course, that never happened because I just realized they ended the series on November 22nd.
Yeah, Chris mentioned this like at the top of the show.
Oh, I missed that part. I don't know what I was doing at the time, but I think it's kind of funny that, you know. So, Chris, if we ever do go on to DS9, are you sure you want to do it all over again?
I don't know, man. I've been enjoying retirement.
No, you have. Hey, don't worry about it. By the time we get to DS9, you would have been out of it so long.
I might be able to.
I was going to say, it's either going to be you're really going to want to get back in, or, you know, you're...
I was going to name drop Carlito's way there, but then I figured Lou would have to type on his computer for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Every time I try to get out, they pull me right back in.
I mean, but by the way, Lou, my worry wasn't that Upper Pylon 2 were going to beat us. My worry is that Trekmate in the Wilderness are going to come back and they're going to beat us.
Yeah. So,
as long as we can just about hold those guys off, I'm good.
Yeah, well, we'll try. At least try and get it done someday. So here, okay, now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode with a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Matt, how about you? Let's start with you, buddy.
Oh, all right. Well, like I said, it was better than I remember it having been. On the rewatch, I've heard it just... described other episodes before. It was a romp. It was just something fun to get through the show. Nothing really had any meaning behind it in the end. It was just a fun thing to do, and it had some good scenes to it, and you know, so it was enjoyable, I thought. So I don't know. I don't have much to say about that we haven't already said. I think it's a middle of the road episode. I'll give it a 3 out of 5.
Okay, James, how about you go next?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm trying to figure out where I should land in terms of number, because I suppose it didn't actively cause pain, which I think the episode has to cause pain for me to give it a 1. So maybe I won't give it a 1, but... I don't even think it's an average episode of TNG. I think it's a below average episode of TNG. I don't think it's even fun, right? I mean, I'm all in favor of these rompy episodes that are just complete nonsense on the side for no reason at all. But even when we have those episodes, right, there's usually something a little bit, you know, a little bit behind it. I mean, I'm coming in at a 2. Lou, I've been grumpy recently. What did I give Rascals? I think this and Rascals is around the same.
Rascals, you gave a 5.
No, that was me. That was me. I gave that 5.
Then I must
no,
be.
No, it says a guest rating was 3. Did I do that wrong?
Clearly.
I gave it a 4. James, you're saying 3. Matt, you're saying 5.
Yeah. I have to say, I think with Rascals, it was due to the pleasantness of the company. So, if I've made that statement out loud, I might have to...
You jackleg. Are you saying that?
I might have to up it again. No, I'm going to come in at a 2 on this one.
Okay. Just, by the way...
It's just nothing. Yeah.
By the way, Chris, you know, you still got time to put those thoughts that you have for Rascal, so
okay.
You might want to do that
soon. I might try. I don't know. It depends on my schedule.
Hey, man, no hurry. I'm sure there's no hurry, but hey, just in case. It could sneak up on you any day now. Anyway, so I'm going to go next here. There's really not much more to say. I got to be honest. It's innocent enough. At first view, it does seem pretty... It seemed pretty scary when Worf was facing all these Datas. But then after watching it so many times, that you know, I just look at it for what it is. It's a harmless fun. It's a romp, as you guys call it. So that's really... It's not a terrible thing. It isn't a really great thing, but it isn't terrible, terrible. For Star Trek, not much there. But for fun, I'll give it a 3. It's not that bad. So I think I'm with Matt on a 3. So the reason why I had Chris go last is that way we can explain why this is 5. Or Let's end on a very high note, and I think Chris could supply that today.
I watch a lot of Star Trek in my house on the big TV, and most of the time that Star Trek elicits great groans from my children. And every time I put this episode on, they suddenly love the Star Trek, as my son tells me. Came in today as I'm watching this one last time before we get into this episode. Oh, Daddy, I wubbed a Star Trek. Is this the Worf one? Yeah, this is the Worf one, son. Let's dig in.
Star Trek.
So I think that for that reason, the fact that I'm able to find an episode like this one or the baseball episode in DS9 that can get my kids on board and make them see that Star Trek can be fun and that these weird looking aliens can do normal things and be involved in things, and it's just a lot of fun. And so you hook them with the sweet stuff like this, the candy, so they say, and then when they say, "Who's Barclay?" Oh, well, let's go back and find a Barclay episode that would be appropriate for you little 5-year-old. And so, yeah, I think that for that reason alone, this is 5 stars for me. It's the gateway drug that I'm using for my children to inoculate them against the world and its viruses with beautiful, wonderful Star Trek. So for me, 5 stars all day long.
Okay. So Matt was a 3, Chris was a 5, James was a 2, and I'm a 3. All right. And James, real quick, what were you saying about Take Me Out to the Holosuite?
Take Me Out to the Holosuite. That's a great episode.
It really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Yep. Okay. Well, maybe we'll talk about it one day.
When we finally get to it, though, Doc's going to be like, this is a hokey episode. I give it 1.5 stars. He's going to be such a grizzled podcasting vet that all
what
of like
what
the
is
shine
baseball team. They're playing.
I remember first season Doc who was like, I like this episode. It's a 4. We're in the first season, Doc. It can't be a 4.
Yeah.
No, the first season had a 5. I mean, where no one has gone before, a 5-star episode.
Well, Chris, you mentioned about your... I was going to say, Chris, you mentioned that your kids really liked this episode. It reminded me that this episode did have that really great... slam on Worf. I'm trying to remember what the line was. Where he talked about how he looked like an armadillo.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
I don't remember what the exact line was, but...
It was Eli at the very beginning, right?
Yeah.
When he was going to fight him that second time, I feel like.
Yeah, was your dad an armadillo or something?
You're so ugly, was your dad an armadillo?
Yeah, something like that. Okay. All right, guys.
Definitely
see
the kids getting behind a line like that.
Oh, yeah. And just the punch in the face from the first scene. Like, loved it.
Just step back from that. So Barclay wrote this holodeck program to include racial slurs. I mean, what?
Against Klingons, nonetheless.
I mean, yeah.
Right?
Klingons.
I mean, Barclay had some... He was thinking of that line, and he was like, ooh, there's a good one. I've always wanted to say that before.
So you got to find out in like 15 years' time that Barclay's a secret closet racist against Klingons and Cardassians and the rest of it. And he's scrawled all of this stuff into various programs that he's written on the ship.
Oh, Barclay. Hey,
let me ask you guys real quick. I'm just curious. The name of the episode, they went with A Fistful of Datas. The other option that they were considering at first was The Good, the Bad, and the Klingon.
Yeah.
Which one do you think was the right choice?
Fistful.
Yeah, Fistful, I guess.
Yeah, because there is a literal Fistful of Datas. Now that's clever.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the other one implies that Worf is ugly, which again is another racial slur on the Klingon.
Well, yeah.
The good, the bad, and the Klingon. All right, so anyway, we need to end this. We're
okay. Long.
So guys, thank you again. And we're always running long. And do I take it, Matt, you're coming back next time for Quality of Life?
Oh, geez, are you guys about ready to kick me off yet?
Glutton for punishment.
You are. Yeah, I have you down for Quality of Life.
I'm waiting for y'all to say, you know what, you're on here way too much.
Well, I would ask if anybody else wants to come on, but by the time they hear it, it's already long gone.
A powerful new invention leads to a startling discovery.
I have reason to believe
The exocomps are alive, but a crisis will force Data to choose between man and machine.
Doctor, the station must be evacuated.
Prepare for emergency transport.
I have locked out the controls. Will he sacrifice his own captain to protect a new life form?
You release that transporter lockout now!
I cannot do that, sir.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
So everyone, join us next time as we review Episode 9, and that's called Home Soil Part 2. I'm sorry, I meant the quality of life.
Oh, I thought it was Measure of a Man Part 2.
I think it's Home Soil Part 2. And James, if you remember a few years ago when I was pounding on Home Soil badly.
Yeah.
I got a feeling I'll be reprising that role again next time.
Why, this one's good, I think. Haven't seen it in a while.
We'll watch it. We'll watch it. Then we'll really talk about that.
Worry so. Well, oh, yeah. I'll see you guys at Wolf 359. Have a good one.
Oh, no. Everybody dies there. All right. Good night, everybody.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Wolf 359.